Hey everybody, this is Wade with Wade for Wireless, and got a lot of feedback. In fact, I have even more feedback than I could put in this post. So what I did in this post, I concentrated everything on one blog that I did, tower injuries. Is this the price of doing business? And I got a lot of feedback on that, needless to say. So just want to let you guys know that I'm trying to stay on top of it, okay? There will probably be about three more feedback posts because I want to get back to what everyone says. And I think you guys appreciate it. I like to put your comments out there. I like everybody to be able to hear what you say. Yeah, I mean, that's probably why you like to post it. Just to be clear, I don't use names because I don't want anyone to get harassed. And I don't put in email addresses or anything like that. If you put your company name in, I will post that, but only because you put it in the text. So let me get on with it. But first, a few notes. I have my scope of work training. That link's in the post. For those of you that need to write, follow, or understand the scope of work, I did a tutorial for you. It's a video tutorial. I have that out there. It's for sale. I have my books. The other thing is I'm starting a monthly newsletter. First one went out a couple weeks ago. And I'm going to do one a month to start and see how you guys like it and put links in there to my posts and things like that. So if you want to sign up for that, when you get in the blog, it should be on the top right side. It's on the side. You can just put in your name and email address. No one give me your name. Just put in your email address. If you want the newsletter, obviously. So just wanted to put that out there. So, okay, when I wrote this post, you know, tower injuries, is this the price of doing business? One of the things that I need to, I put it out there for, obviously, was because we're getting a black eye in the tower industry because everyone says how dangerous it is. In fact, if you look at the links, it's one of the industries that nobody wants to get into, mainly because of the perception. Now, I know some of you guys are probably like glad because you don't want the competition, but the reality is it would be nice to have people get into it if we build it up properly with the training and the apprenticeship and the things that TYRAP basically has in there for the proper process. What we want to do is make sure that we have everything set up that we can bring people in and they can follow an industry standard and become the best wireless worker they can be, the best tower climber they can be, the best tower technician they can be, the best mechanical engineer they can be, the best RF engineer they can be. We need something in there to make this job absolutely positively safe, as safe can be in this industry. And we also need to make sure that they're trained properly. And one thing I would like to see is to see that everyone gets paid what they deserve to get paid. When you're new, I know we'd all like to start at the top. That was my dream, but the reality is you have to start at the bottom and work your way up. If you're really good at what you do, it won't take long. If you really stink at what you do, it's going to take a little longer. You got to learn the job, people. You all know that. Anyone listening to this knows that. But the reality is you have to learn about it. So all this feedback, again, is from my post, tower injuries. Is this the price of doing business? And the first one was Highwade. The comment was meant towards Sprint, Verizon, AT&T, the major companies that contract out the work so they don't have to pay union scale wages to their employees. But I agree as the one it was said to about everything you wrote. And I say thank you. Anyone who agrees with me, thank you. If you disagree with me, I don't have a problem with that. I just point out where I'm wrong. If you disagree, that's fine. I mean, I think it's good that we all talk and clear the air with everything. You know, I'm just trying to understand why you think the way you do or why, what, maybe I'm wrong. I have no problem admitting I'm wrong. You know, sometimes I'm wrong. Sometimes I misunderstand or sometimes I try to get a point across and I blow it. Okay. Anyway, next comment. This fatalistic approach has no place in a safety culture. No level of accidents, much less deaths, should be acceptable. I agree wholeheartedly. I really do. I couldn't agree more with that statement. Next comment. Great article. I experience a lot of deadlines or it has to be done situations. There are better ways to send guys out in the morning without turning it into a race. I am 15 plus years into the telecommunications industry and I take a laid back and still be safe point of view with my crew and it works. Also, the quality of work is excellent. So that's great to hear. Trust me, it's great that someone can relax and pay attention to the deployment itself rather than the deadlines that often overcome many of us. And I think that's awesome, because here's a guy that obviously has a good head in his Here's a person that obviously has a good head in their shoulders, because they understand that when you rush, you make mistakes. Just think about everyday life. When you rush, you make mistakes. When you're not, when you don't pay attention to what you're doing at that moment, you make mistakes. When you're not in the present, you make mistakes. When you're not presently where you should be mentally, you tend to make mistakes. And especially me. A lot of times when you multitask, you make mistakes. But that's another subject and an argument. So let's move on. The next comment. If you ever worked, I'm sorry, I wanted to start over. So the next comment, it makes a lot of sense. So just bear with me. If you have ever worked as an installer on one of these towers, you cannot understand how difficult it is to perform the tasks required to do a job. The owners, designers, and producers of the towers are simply designing towers to support the antennas and lines without any thought as to how they will be erected and maintained. Other than step bolts, which are a major contributor to the fatalities. In comparison, look at the U.S. Forest Service towers. Has there ever been an accident where a Forest Service worker fell from a tower? If there was, I never heard about it. And these towers have been around much longer than communication towers. The service was astute enough to provide a safe workplace for the employees. That's the end of the comment. Hey, and my response is, good point. I mean, that is a great point. If anyone's not familiar with the old Forest Service towers, they have stairways that go up the middle to the top, okay? They were very safe towers, and what they used the towers for originally was to spot fires. They build them up to where they went above the trees. You know, they'd be about 60 to 100 feet. I don't know if they were 100 feet. Let's say 60 feet. Most trees in the U.S. anyway, I don't think are much over 60 feet. I know there's exceptions. You're going to bring up the redwoods and all that. I'm just making a point here. Most of them were around that height. And the reason they got up there was so they could spot fires over the tree line. And they built them very big, very safe. And that was something that was very well thought out. So I got to tell you, my response, I don't know if the Forest Service ever had any injuries up there, other than maybe a guy having a heart attack trying to make it up all the steps, but most of those forest rangers seem pretty healthy to me, at least the guys I knew. So I couldn't find any mistake, I'm sorry, any injuries from Forest Service towers. I did look. I didn't spend a lot of time. I spent about 15, 20 minutes looking. So I have to agree. You know, you aren't climbing up the side. They didn't skimp to save money. Many of them were wood. Now, some of them did rot as the years went on, but the ones that were maintained really did a good job of staying up, and they were taken care of. So it is funny that they built these things safe and big. Now, they weren't mounting much on there. However, I will tell you this. I did work on a few forest ranger towers where they turned them into towers, but what they had to do was basically build a tower around it. And eventually, like most tower owners, they didn't take care of the steps. The steps rotted out. We wound up climbing up the side anyway. That's one difference you'll see with like the forest rangers. When they maintain ownership, they take very good care of most things. Whereas I don't know how it is today, but several tower owners used to just let things, you know, fall apart. I mean, it was mostly the people climbing them that maintained them, because the tower owners didn't want to put any more money into them than they had to. But I'm getting off point. So he's right. There's a lot of physical obstacles in the way when you climb up a tower. You know, you're trying to climb up. You got to climb around the dish. The pegs may be missing, or maybe there's no climbing pegs at all. You're trying to figure out which is a climbing leg or the climbing face. On some of the older towers, they had a climbing face where they put more cross members across. That you could actually make it up on the outside of the tower. And that was the face you were supposed to climb on. I know they don't put safety climbs on much. And you know what? I know recently there was a recall of safety climbs, the cables, you know, the safety cables. The cable grabs is what they used, and they had a cable that went up the side, but hey, at least you're tied off to something. It was, it gave you a little bit of security there. I know we want 100% tie off, and it does take time to tie off when you have to wrap your safety lanyard around, say, a tower leg or a cross member or something like that, because it's too big for your Pelican hook. So one thing you're going to want to do is make sure that you're 100% tied off and you're climbing up the safest leg you can climb on. And if you have to climb around the dish, because they do mount dishes on climbing legs, I know the safe work environment, OSHA rules, doesn't matter. If that's the leg that has line of sight, if there's a 12-foot dish on there, chances are they mounted it on the leg, one for the weight rating, because, you know, it's a 12-foot dish. Let's not get into it. Let's just say a 12-foot dish on a climbing leg. They did it because it has line of sight to where it has to go. That's basically it. It can hold the weight. They didn't want to put it in the face. They had to put it in the leg for the alignment. So you, the climber, have to climb around it. Suppose they put a platform on there. You, the climber, have to climb around the platform or the mount or whatever. And trust me, just because you're climbing up a monopole doesn't mean they align the holes on the platforms that you can go up on where you climb. Trust me, I had a lot of them where you tie your safety lanyard off and you have to swing over to the ladder. And it's scary in a way. You have to swing over to the ladder. Usually they put a ladder down and then hope the ladder is good and solid to hold you as you pull yourself up. Now, for anyone that thinks this sounds, you know, easy, when you're 100 between 100 foot and 150 foot in the air, it's a little scary, right? Because you're not only climbing up, you got to swing yourself out to get to the ladder, grab hold, all your hooks and everything. Then you got to unhook your hooks. And you're not only pulling your weight up, you're pulling the weight of everything that's attached to you, your safety lanyard, your safety harness, your lanyards, all your tools and your belt, the rope. Chances are if you're the first guy up, you have a rope connected to you that's hanging down. So there's 120 foot of rope. All that weight adds up. It's a lot of work. It's probably why my rotator cuffs are ripped to shreds now because of stuff like that happening all the time. Then if you had to go through two or three platforms, usually they were about 15 foot apart. Not always, you know, anywhere between 10 and 20 foot. And they weren't always lined up, so you have to climb up, and you got to do this goofy thing where if you can't climb up because the climbing area isn't right, they're supposed to put a ladder down. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Sometimes you got to pull a ladder up to get to the next platform. I've had that happen. Don't ask. It's just crazy how they do some of these things. My point there is it isn't well thought out, and that's why it's so dangerous to climb these. And I know I'm way off subject because he was just trying to say about all the physical, he or she, the person was trying to say about the physical obstructions. I'm just giving you some examples of what's out there in the real world. So let's go to the next comment. Hi, Wade. There are aspects of life this side of the pond where we have a surfeit of legislation and it suffocates us. But when it comes to H&S and mobile comms, I am glad that we have tight legislation, prescriptive regulations, and significant penalties for companies and individuals that do not comply. I work for a large company, JV, between two carriers, and compliance with our construction design and management regs is obsolete and audited. I'm sorry. I said obsolete. Sorry, let me start over. It's absolute. That's what I meant to say. He had it right. I work for a large tower company, JV, between two carriers, and compliance with our construction design and management regs is absolute and audited, and it underpins an uncompromising approach to working safe and staying safe. It is frightening in any civilized country that injuries and fatalities might even flippantly be said to be the price of doing business, or perhaps to be viewed as in some way inevitable in delivery of rollout and upgrade projects to time and or to budget. It's time we replace this triangle of contention between time, cost, and quality. Handmade it a pyramid with H&S no longer a silent factor. Finally, you know, I read this three times. He makes a great point and I'm ruining it. Finally, well done on having a blog and a LinkedIn page. Call this out. Regards. So, one, thank you. I really do appreciate it. And I'm sorry I butchered your comment. Hey, it's in the blog, everyone. Read it. He did a much better job writing it than I did reading it, okay? But I'd like to thank you because your comments show us that how here in the States, because our government is, you know, went from being, our government's more or less socialistic now, right? And which I know you have a lot of that over there in Europe. So the thing over here is we have so much regulation, it swings by industry. I don't know how to explain it, but here in the States, there's so much regulation on some things that it looks bad. And because of the political parties, you no longer know what is good regulation, what is bad regulation. And they tend to regulate things that don't need regulated, and they tend not to regulate things that need it. And you know, my stance is it's mostly political, right? Like the big companies that have the money to lobby government tend to be deregulated and they can do what they want to do. And I get it. They're trying to make more money, create more work and all that. But on the other hand, how many people have to die before they really realize what regulation we need? Apparently, you know, in the past 2 years here in the States, we had 24 deaths. So apparently more than 24 have to die before they do something. I hate to be that cold and I hate to be that blunt, but that's the reality of it. I would like to thank you because that's one thing I like to do. I like to compare these countries to, when I say these countries, across the U.S., we all have slightly, across the U.S., you can tell I'm from the States. Across the world, we have different regulations in each country. And here in the U.S., you know, I think for most workers and for most industries, it seems very safe. But it's just the opinion I have or the way I see it, it seems like the climbing industry is overlooked on a lot of things. And I can't figure out why. However, now that the wireless industry is maturing, and I think the government sees there's a lot of accidents out there. I mean, I doubt the president does. I don't see President Obama out there saying, oh, we got to do something about climbing. He's got other things to worry about. Obviously, I'm not saying he doesn't care. He probably just doesn't know. With that said, the chairman of the FCC, Tom Wheeler, he knows. Chairman of the Department of Labor, they know. Chairman of OSHA, they know. Those guys know because they see it. They see what's out there. Is it their primary concern? Should be. I know they got a lot going on, and I know they're making billions off the new auction here in the States, which is great. It's going to be great for FirstNet, which will be our next build-out, I hope, sometime in 2016. But the reason I hope, because I want more work for everyone here in the States. So with all, and they're doing these LTE public safety build-outs across the world. I think Korea's starting theirs, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, getting off the point again, thank you. Because in England, I see that it's regulation that you, I'm assuming England. In Europe, I see each one of your countries has regulation that's a little different, and you appreciate the regulation that's there. I did a lot about Australia. I like their regulation. However, some guys had different opinions about that, guys that work down under. So, and I know some of you in Germany and England, in the UK, I do get emails from you guys. So I know that the regulation's a lot different over there and it's a lot stricter. Same as Canada. And, hey, if I'm wrong about this, straighten me out. I'll print it up. I'll try to send the correction out. Probably won't be as quick as you'd like because sometimes I get a little behind. But the regulation and requirements for climbing in each country is different. And believe it or not, the U.S. is not ahead in safety. Not at all. It seems like Australia is pretty safe. Canada is really safe. They seem to really, at least my perception is they have it together up there. Those guys are really good. I see it seems like in the U.K. they have their act together. I think in Germany they have their act together. Now, outside of that, I don't know a lot about the other countries, but why don't you do that? You guys send me an email or give me some feedback on one of my feedback forms. Let me know what's it like in your country outside of the States. I know in the States, you know, if you get in Facebook, it's very hard to see what the reality is. And I know different states inside the USA were trying to make their own regulation, but it just never really seemed to get off the ground. You know, North Carolina was trying to pave the way, and it seemed to be a good start, but it didn't seem to finish. So let me move on to the next comment. So the next comment starts out like this. Every accident is preventable. That is not a safety slogan, but an actual fact. The problem is that safety costs more than a lot of employers and or their employees want to pay. In this business, tower work, you don't get off easy when you make a mistake. Serious injury and death are regrettable results when mistakes happen at an elevated position. Take a closer look at the photo above. My note, I actually put the photo in there. It was a photo from the that particular blog post. So I put it in there so everyone could look. It's just a photo of a celery on top of a monopole, and everything's mounted underneath the platform. All right, let me go on. Photo up above. Do you see all of those cable connections on the bottom of the antennas and the radio heads that are inaccessible unless someone suspends himself over from the tower / platform mount? How much would it cost to relocate those connections to positions above the bottom of the platform to afford a safer and efficient work position? Why continue to put good people in harm's way to do their work? Safety starts on the drawing board of every project, every product, and every project. If not, the risk to the worker greatly increases and the opportunities for serious accidents go up accordingly. It is time to re-engineer approach to safety in the wireless industry. Hey, I got to tell you, I couldn't agree more. This engineering thing is very rarely thought through. And you know what? That is one thing. They always put that crap underneath the platform so you got to dangle down. And that's like that guy that had to be rescued that was hanging off the bottom of the platform. I mean, it's just something that gets me fired up. When you see how these things are built, and I'm going to throw out some examples here. When you see how these things are built, it doesn't make any sense, but you got to understand the people that build them rarely go up in the air. In fact, they build a lot of these platforms on the ground, and I'm not sure why they do it the way they do it. Sometimes they do it because on the ground, you got this idea, oh yeah, this is great, we can reach it. Then you put it 150 foot in the air and it's like, what the hell was I thinking? But the thought is when you're doing an installation, you want to do everything on the ground as quick as possible and then get it up as quick as possible. And then you pray to God it works, right? So when they engineer this stuff, there's three things. One, the tower owner probably wants it mounted on the mount a certain way. And they like it on the bottom of the mount because of the weight is distributed better when it's below the mount. When it's above the mount, you have a little more, I know you guys probably could agree or disagree, but when it's above the platform, there's more stress on the platform because the weight above is pushing outward and downward normally. So you have a lever, right? And I know some of you guys are going to argue this, but if you just think about it, you have a lever and you got like this, you know, however many hundreds of pounds above the platform that are pushing down and stressing the tower, let's say a monopole or a tower. Whereas if it's under, it's already pulling down. It's not pulling front or back. It's pulling straight down. Okay, if you can picture that. So there is physics involved. Who thought physics class would pay off? Well, here it's paying off. So that one of the reasons is because of the tower. It's because of the way they like the weight distributed on the mount, on the platform. So now when it's on a leg or a face or something like that, it's a little different. But in this case, we're going to point at the platforms because a lot of stuff is mounted in platforms on these monopoles. But I think they do it for that reason. And I also think that obviously on the OEM side, they want everything mounted vertically in a pipe normally. Most OEMs want it vertically in a pipe. Not too many want it horizontal because of water. You mount it vertical, you have all your connections on the bottom. The thought process is the water runs down. It doesn't run into connectors or anything. You just want to make sure everything's watertight. And I would imagine they still like to vapor seal and tape everything. I couldn't imagine that ever going away, but hey, what do I know? I know they have these waterproof connectors. Let me tell you something. Waterproof connectors, they work about half the time. And I know there's some company out there that's going to give me a hard time for saying that, but even though it's waterproof, it's still a good idea to tape, vapor seal, and tape again. It's just a standard practice. So with all that said, we really do need to think of safety end to end. I couldn't agree with that more. I could not agree with that more. And when I say end to end, from the time the tower is built, they need to have respectable tie-off points. They need to have like the best safety climb they can have. And they also need to think how far apart the tie-off points, the anchor points are. You need an anchor point so you have something to anchor to. Most of the times when you're climbing up a tower, you know, you have to, if your pelican hook won't fit around the cross member, you're going to have to wrap it around and clip it to itself, the safety lanyard. You're going to keep doing that the whole way up, right? Everyone says, well, you're not supposed to do that, stress, blah, 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 if something happens. I get it. But what do? You go up not tied off, you know? I mean, it's one thing for someone on the ground to say, shoulda, coulda, woulda, but the reality is what you're doing. Also, with that said, if something does happen and your pelican hook's tied off on a clip on your belt and you hit the ground and both your safety lanyards are clipped on your belt, now who looks bad? No one's going to believe that you clipped them off on the way down. It's just not the way it is. So you're going to be as safe as you can and work with what you got. But from the time the tower is built, I wish you'd take that into consideration. Now, when you're mounting stuff on the tower, they need to take into consideration the climber about how to mount it, how to work on it, and how to do maintenance. That's something else. And my example I put in here, years ago when I was doing transmitter work, I remember they designed these transmitters to have a small footprint in the shelter. That was back when most people just put crap in a shelter, right? You stood them up like you had two-way, you had paging, you had trunking, and everyone just had their cabinets, and they just locked their cabinets. Whereas now, a lot of the cellular guys, you know, if you're in a big building, they fence it in and they have room to work in their area. Same as broadcast. If broadcast is in a shared building, chances are it's fenced off or it's in a closet, something like that. But the problem is they made this stuff small, but it was impossible to work on without ripping everything apart. It was such a pain in the ass because you had to take your cabinet and pull it out. And then you had to hope your coax wasn't stressed too much because when the guys put it in, they run the coax right there. So chances are if you didn't have a jump or something, now, this is back when everyone connected coax to the cabinets. You had to worry about that. You had to worry about pulling your power out. And back then, a lot of people just plugged stuff in. They didn't wire it direct. When you plugged it in, you put knots in your power cable. So if there was a lightning strike, the knot blew before your equipment did. You know, it's just all kinds of things to think about. But my point was, I had to rip these things out. I remember you had to rip all this stuff apart. Chances are you couldn't even work on it while it was 1 year. You couldn't even troubleshoot it because you have to rip everything apart. And then you needed like you need like 10 different tools to work on it. You need a flathead screwdriver, you need a Phillips screwdriver, you need a Torx screwdriver, you need a nut driver to get in there and do things. And the thing that was hardest to get to the most is usually the thing that failed the most. You know, it's just like, to relate it to automobiles. I once had a Chevy pickup, right? I think it was a Chevy 1500 for a work truck. The thing that failed the most was the gas pump. The gas pump was in the gas tank. It was in the gas tank. They had I'm trying to think how it was designed. Anyways, to take it apart, you had to drop the gas tank down. You had to take this tube out of the gas tank. The pump went down in it. They had power run down to it. It was just a crazy setup. But you know how many of those I went through in like 3 years? I must have had 5 or 6 of them fail. 5 or 6 of these gas pumps. It was the hardest thing to get to. It was a lot of labor for like this $12 part that's in the truck. You know, it was the same way in these transmitters. You had to do all this work. You had to take it down for hours, rip everything apart, get every tool out of your toolbox to get it out, just to replace this, you know, this part that actually on the transmitter is probably about $35. But it's like 5 hours of labor when these, I know I'm breaking it down to something simple so most people can relate, but when you're on the tower and you see that, let's say there's water in a connector, right? Relatively a simple fix. Let me tell you something, water in a connector, chances are you're going to need your channel locks or your pliers. You're going to need your blade. You're going to have to take up extra tape, vapor seal, possibly an extra connector in case the connector breaks, a jumper, take up a spare jumper in case the jumper is bad. So you're going to take all this stuff with you. Then when you get up there, then you got to make sure you have ropes so you can do a controlled descent. So now you have to take your rope up. You have to take your, I would have taken a Fisk, but I guess now people would take a Petzl ID or something, you know, whatever's required in your country. So now you got to take all this up. Now you got to make sure you have 2 or 3 guys on the ground in case something goes wrong and you can be rescued or you can rappel down. Oh, let's not forget the rope grab because you need your safety rope up there. Now you're taking up 2 ropes. You're taking down, taking your one rope to do a controlled descent, you're taking your other rope for the rope grab for the safety in case something happens to the first rope. Oh, now look, now you're taking up, let's say you're 150 up, you're taking up 300 foot of rope. I know you're not going to take it up. You're going to tie it off. I would tie it off and drag it up, but some guys would just drop a small rope and pull it up, and I get it. And then you're going to have, in my case, I would have, instead of tying it onto something, which I was never a fan of, I would take up my termination bar, and I would put my termination bar onto something good and solid. So now you're putting your termination bar up. You got to go above where you have to work, okay? You understand? Because the rope has to be above where you have to work so you can get down there with all your rope, and you can actually do a controlled descent over the side. So suddenly, hey, it's not a 5-minute job anymore, is it? Suddenly, it's a 3 to 4 hour job, so you can go shake water out of a connector and seal it back up. You know what I mean? It's a lot of work because it's below the platform, but nobody thinks of that when they put this together. So, and also, when you do a controlled descent, you can try to pull yourself back up. And I know they have all the tools. I forget what they're called, but you can actually have the tools to pull yourself back up. But the reality is, what you're probably going to do is just rappel all the way down and climb up again, depending upon how far you drop. If you think you can pull yourself back up, that's great. But not everybody can. Not everyone's healthy as most of us are. Not everyone's as strong as most of us are. So, I would probably try to pull myself up, but then, you know, I was 180. I wasn't exactly a heavy guy, and I could easily pull up, you know, probably about 250 pounds, but it was a lot of work. I know, we did those controlled descents and we would work out, I mostly did a lot of dishes. I would work below dishes. Pulling myself up was hard, especially over a dish, because you don't want to cause damage. I mean, if you got to put your foot in where there's a cable, or you're going to push in on a dish, I know the dishes have the radomes, the weather covers over them, but you don't want to damage anything. You're just better off to go down all the way to the ground and climb back up. And I could do it. You know what I'm saying? Or you would send two guys up, and the first guy would just go all the way down. Second guy would do the rope drop. So just drop the ropes down. Hey, I know I'm way off here, you know, in some of this stuff, way off point. But I think it all ties together. The reality is, if we could engineer everything beginning to end, I think it would be brilliant if we did that. Does everyone want to do it? No. I mean, I don't think anyone really wants to think it through that far. I wish we would, but they just don't. And if you don't believe me, if you're in the carrier business, look how many remote radio heads need replaced because there's problems with them. Somebody's got to do that. It's not an easy job. It's not a quick job. And the carrier doesn't like doing it because, you know, chances are they're going to lose a carrier or they're going to lose a sector or something like that when you take it down. So it's a problem. I don't think they require to do it in the maintenance window anymore, but I think they still want it done properly and safely. I think even a carrier wants that done safely. So if you can plan things out ahead of time, you're going to save yourself time in the long run. Can you get that through everyone's head? No. Everyone thinks install it and forget it. Let me tell you something. Those people probably never had a maintenance contract. When you and this is why I bring this up all the time, because a maintenance contract is where the money's at, in my opinion. I like maintenance contracts because it was steady money. You got reoccurring money, you know, annually or semi-annually or monthly if you're that good. However, a lot of the carriers don't want to pay maintenance. They just have their own people, and they'll call you as needed, on demand. So I just wanted to bring all this stuff up because when you think of the end-to-end design, I love that idea. But the reality is, when OSHA goes out to investigate something, the only end-to-end they're looking at is a climber. They're looking at, what does this guy do wrong? Then they expand it. What did his company do wrong? They don't look at the tower owner. They don't say, well, there's no tie-off points. They don't look at the way the equipment's mounted and say, well, why'd they mount the equipment under the platform? That just seems stupid. Here's what they look at. They look at, one, what did the climber do wrong? Was the safety gear engaged? Did he do all he could do to prevent this accident? Two, did the company that this climber works for do all that they can do to prevent this accident? Did they do the training? Let me look at my notes here. Hold on. I just listed out earlier. So I just want to get it right, fellas. So did they provide the proper training? That's number one. Did they provide the proper safety equipment? That's number two. And did they do the inspections? What do I mean by inspections? If you're running crews, you should have a safety person. That safety person doesn't have to be a dedicated person. It could be a supervisor, manager, the owner of the company, just somebody. You have somebody that goes out and inspects what they're doing. Hey, I got to tell you, I talked to a lot of tower companies. When I was down there at the FCC and the Department of Labor's kickoff of tire app, those companies did that. They went above and beyond. The owners, the managers, the supervisors, they would send their crews out and they would randomly go inspect them themselves. They didn't sit there and say, well, OSHA should go out and inspect them. They inspected it themselves. And the guy from American Tower, I forget his name, but he said that that's what they do with their people. They send their people out to inspect people climbing their towers. And they'll throw them off if they don't practice 100% tie-off. Now, why do they do that? They do that because they care about the people, obviously, okay? But they also care about safety. It has to be a culture, people. I know we can teach, train, preach. I can talk to him blue in the face. And for those of you that don't care, you don't care. That's just the way it is. It's not in your culture to be safe. You just could give a rat's ass about whether you're safe or anyone else is. You want that dollar. And trust me, it doesn't have to be the climber. One of the points they made at that conference was it can start at the top and work its way down. The culture is the thought process throughout the company. When a company is so cheap that they don't care about safety, just about the schedule, it's a problem. That's my point. And I think that's why the end-to-end design in some of this matters, but also in the company, end-to-end in the company, from the front line, the climber, back to the CEO, back to the manager, back to the president, back to the owner, back to the crew lead, back to the project manager, back to the foreman. Hey, it's a team effort. That's why I say all these times I keep saying everyone plays a part. I know a lot of you guys don't think that. You think it's like voting. I voted, my guy lost. It's not like that. You need to set an example, people, no matter where you're at in the company. You need to show your care. You need to prove you care. You need to work like you care. Set the example. Be the example. Show the people that you are as safe as you can possibly be, and you're going to have good work ethic, and you're going to work as hard as you possibly can. All right? I went on long enough. I'm all fired up now. So everyone, take care of yourselves. Be smart. Be safe. Pay attention to what you're doing. Take care.